Well,
who's breathing on their bloody microphone? Right, that's
not me.
Bloody it now.
Yes, it is.
Is that okay? Well, I'm breathing now.
Yes.
Right, okay, hang on a minute.
Hello.
How's that?
Well, I don't know if you better. Noticed, but I posted a few days ago.
Yes.
I guess it's 2 days ago. The
what
podcast? The Playing Doctor podcast just randomly started talking about the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. It was just.
What were they saying?
Oh, good things.
Oh, yes.
And I posted a link to it on our Facebook page.
Okay, I'll have to look out for that.
Things you said.
I'm trying to remember. I'm extremely tired.
I've been
outside.
Whoa.
I paid paid services in association with Who1.co.uk present a 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 262. I'm Adam, and I can't think of any quotes, so you caught me on the hop there. And here's Andy Nunny.
You killed him!
And Kirby Butler Sloan.
It's a pity I didn't get that degree, isn't it?
And Mary Lang.
I thought I killed all of you.
For a moment there, I thought you were going to say, I tore a putty tag. I thought I was going to say, what on earth has that got to do with the show? Yes, this week we're going to be talking about The Rescue, but because we've been talking quite a lot before going on there, I thought I'd just jump in now so Kirby could tell me what the Playing Doctor podcast has been saying about us.
I don't remember exactly. Oh, I think they were saying stuff about how we are always wandering off to conventions and stuff. Well, at least the American contingent does.
It's actually true, yeah.
And me and Andy went to the Doctor Who Celebration, which is essentially a convention.
Yeah.
And Debbie's going to one, but she hasn't been yet. No, it's gone all quiet. That doesn't work particularly well in audio presentations.
Was that one of the good things that they said?
Yeah, everything they said was good. They only meant, but it was just odd to be listening to the Playing Doctor podcast. And every once in a while, they make a joke about me because I tend to fact check them.
Does that implies they listen to the show? You know,
yes.
So I'd better be nice.
Yes, I listen to them, and they occasionally make mistakes about various little details.
The
about
fools, this. Knowing you're a listener. Yeah. And making mistakes. Fools!
Kirby, so, listening to you.
Yeah. So I fact check them. So
you inflict yourself on others than us, huh?
Yes.
I've been on their podcast once about a year ago.
Okay. Well, yes. Hello, Playing Doctor Podcast. Which episode was it, by the way?
The April 6th. Episode. I don't know what.
How often do they come out?
When they feel like it.
Cool.
Okay.
Right. What about you then, Andy?
What about me? Sorry, I missed the question.
Don't know. Just thought I'd ask you. See if you wanted to add anything to that.
It sounds a little bit like the stories from the Vortex podcast that I do with Matthew and Robert.
See.
Well, the only ones that have done feedback.
Moonlighting.
I've done feedback for the Flashing Blade when Siobhan did it, and
did what?
I did a bit when he did the Flashing Blade. Siobhan
he still does the Flashing Blade, doesn't she?
He still does it, yeah.
She.
Oh, he does. Yeah, sorry, she. Yes. She. All right. It's back in the day when it was Wyn and Joe were on it.
Yes.
Or Joe, and I used to do feedback then. Also done feedback for the Staggerers as well.
Yeah, I did some feedback for the Staggerers.
Yes,
yeah,
so I used to regularly do feedback for them, and I went on one of their Staggering Days out. Went to Cardiff for a day, and that was good fun, that was.
Yeah, cool.
We had the minibus with a massive big, magnetic sign on the side, and a Staggering Day Out. It was good to crack, that was.
Very good, but I can guarantee it's very unlikely, I say guarantee it's very unlikely, that's sort of contradiction in terms, that there will not be any 20 megabyte days out, although it's a nice idea.
Why not? I mean, because
All right. If I win the lottery, there'll be a 20 megabyte day out.
Well, actually, I was thinking, though, there's actually
careful.
There's a location tour in London I've done one of them. It's a different one as well. That possibly, you know, because I know you do come to London occasionally, don't you, Adam?
No.
So possibly you could do that?
No, I won't be doing that. But thanks for the offer anyway. I won't even be doing the one in Cardiff. But I have been trying to get Deb to allow me to go to the Doctor Who Doctor Who Experience in Cardiff, because I've only been to the London one, so I haven't been to the Cardiff. I haven't been since they've revamped it and turned it into Peter Capaldi.
I've got a ticket for the Symphonic Symposium in Wembley in May.
Yeah, I'd like to go to that as well.
Mate of mine's got a couple of tickets for that.
No, we're on one. I said, well, how about you, Andy? What I was actually alluding to was you moonlighting on other podcasts.
Well, I've never done a podcast. The only podcasting I've done is to you, Adam. So there you go. So I am totally faithful to you.
Not what you were implying before we started recording.
No, because Tim has asked me, he's on Facebook today, asked me, he wants to do a podcast about the Who's...
A podcast.
A poo-car, yes. A bit like the Doctor Who we had last week. He wants to do a podcast about the Who's he call. Because I've seen it twice and he saw it on Saturday.
Is that so? What you're saying is because you haven't done that yet means you haven't moonlighted yet.
I have not moonlighted yet.
But it is on your schedule.
I am not Bruce Willis.
So the only one of us that hasn't moonlighted on another podcast is...
Well, I haven't yet.
Debbie Melrose.
Well, I haven't moonlighted yet.
No, but you will be.
Not necessarily.
Yes, you will. It's gone all quiet now, haven't you? What he's not thinking, everybody, is if he moonlights on another podcast, it therefore spreads the word of the 20 Megabyte podcast. Ben Shoveler, one of our... former presenters, and I call him a current one really because he will come back at some point. He moonlighted on Radio 2 and gave us a really good plug. So this is the sort of thing I'm looking for. If you're going to go on another podcast, you're only allowed to do that if you mention the show. Debbie Melrose is the only one of us, and I include me in this, who's not moonlighted on another podcast, because I've been on two other podcasts.
Oh, you've been on the TARDIS Tavern, haven't you? Because you and Alicia were on that once, weren't
you? Yes. And?
What's the other one? Flipping heck, it's the Colton Collective. Were you on that one?
No, I wasn't on that one, no.
Okay, what else have you been on? You haven't been on Staggering, you haven't been on the Flashing Blade.
Well, I haven't been directly on Staggering Stories, I have provided feedback.
What else have you done then?
I've been on Flash and Vader's feedback as well.
Yeah, done that. What else have you done then? I'm trying to think. I've
been on Radio Wrestling feedback.
Oh
my goodness.
Oh, you've been on Radio Wrestling, have you?
No, it's feedback, not directly.
Robert is online.
Is he?
He just came online.
We're trying to get you to work out what the other podcast I went on was. And the clue is Kirby was on it as well at the same time. And Mary, for that matter.
Well, I'm looking now at the list of podcasts on iTunes. Now, it wasn't the Full Contact Rugby podcast, obviously. It wasn't that one. Or the Nev's Left Boot Harlequins podcast. I mean, Debbie Melrose might be on that, because she's Harlequins fan, isn't she?
No, I just told you she's not moonlighted in any other shows.
And it's not the Cricket and Doctor Who podcast, is it?
Why talk a bit like that to make it a bit of a clue?
Oh!
Yeah?
An ex-podcast. It's gone away.
Yes, yeah. So it still was a podcast, though, wasn't it, at some point? Yeah, go on. And it was...
Trying to remember.
Good grief. I still post on the page. I don't know if it's an ex-podcast. You are an ex-podcast. Beautiful plumage, isn't it? Yeah, go on.
I'm trying to remember the name of it because those guys stopped and they shifted over to some other people.
Is it the WhoCast?
No. I tried to get on that permanently.
No, I don't know, Adam. I don't. I remember listening to you and Alicia on the... The Tavern, but I don't remember you being on another podcast.
So I'm just cracking open the tin of Stella.
I'm on the Pinot Grigio.
Ice chilled. Oh, we had Pinot Grigio at the hotel on Friday night.
It's my last glass because this is it. This is my last drink until Friday night.
The Omega podcast.
Yes, it was the Omega podcast, yes.
Or as they like to call it, the Omega podcast.
Yes, indeed. So well done. We finally got through there. And now we're going to be looking at Mary.
Well, did I mention that I was recently on a non-Doctor Who podcast and I still put a plug for us?
No, you didn't.
I might have mentioned it a couple of weeks ago.
If you weren't, I wasn't listening.
I was on the Earth Station 1 podcast.
Well, maybe you
where
did.
we discussed the Marx Brothers.
Oh, yeah, you did mention that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I glossed over it. Yeah.
But because it's the Marx Brothers, we did forget.
Yes. Anyway, right, so this week it's The Rescue, sorry. The story begins, unusually at the moment, this sort of period of Doctor Who, with some new characters that aren't connected with the TARDIS at the moment. Because normally it's usually on the TARDIS or we see the Doctor and that arrive on the planet. But we're already on a planet before the TARDIS arrives, really, isn't it? Oh, no, the TARDIS does arrive. But
yeah, this is very different, yeah.
Yeah, and we've got...
We've got a very obvious model.
Eh? Well, yeah, or the spaceship, yeah. Yes. And then we've got a woman in her probably mid-30s trying to pass herself off as a teenager. She wasn't really that old, but she doesn't look that old. She doesn't look like a teenager, does she? Come
no,
on, let's face
doesn't.
It.
No. No, she doesn't.
That's Maureen O'Brien, by the way, who played Vicky. So it's her and this beardy bloke.
Apparently she was 21 at the time.
Was she? So too old then, really. So this beardy bloke, Bennett, is pretending to be ill and being a bit grumpy and manipulating this, how to say, a woman with very small amount of intelligence at this particular stage.
Yeah. She was a bit wet and thick, wasn't she? She really was.
Yes. Bless her. And she's very good at doing the sulky face as well, which obviously being an actress and she not far away from being a teenager could remember how to do these expressions yes. quite well. So she puts out a distress call to...
No, she doesn't. They had already...
All right, I'll rephrase that, Kirby. She is asking the rescuers how long it's going to be before they
correct.
Come and rescue, but because Bennett's told her 3 days.
She thinks they're already there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's seen the TARDIS. The Doctor, meanwhile, has been taking a nap. He is told that they've landed, and they all sort of nip outside for a bit, and then he decides he's going to go back in for another nap. But instead of going in for a nap, all he's doing is checking readings on instruments, and then he thinks he might be able to pretend he meant to land on Dido. Yes.
Yes, I do enjoy this not quite as grumpy doctor. I mean, he's cracking jokes, the little things like remember I can hear what you're saying. When, yeah.
Well, this is the first Doctor in character, as everybody. He was like this for most of his time. Now this is a more recognisable first Doctor. He's
good.
There now.
Because I'm really, or
he's got a tidied up one.
But he's been like that for a bit. He's started in the last few stories becoming this version of the Doctor, less grumpy and sort of putting his arm around the companion.
And those of us who, since we've almost all seen the Romans, and we'll be discussing that again next week.
Yes,
it gets quite humorous.
Yes,
well,
like I say,
because the Romans is a farce.
Yeah, but if you look at it, even going back to Reign of Terror, he's a bit like that in that. He sort of doesn't take the situation particularly seriously, does he? He's just more interested in sort of going around in the costume and sort of or being a bit of role play that he does. So he's very much like that in that one as well. So I think
he's not above a bit of fun.
No, indeed. So Ian and Barbara sort of go out of the cave, look down and see the spaceship, and then Quillian turns up, and Ian immediately takes a disliking to him, which is quite funny, and then decides to leave Barbara with Quillian while he goes back to get the Doctor.
No, he didn't decide to do that.
All right, you know what I mean. Stop
but then
being
he doesn't
pedantic.
Bother to check to see if she does come along.
No. But Quillian
just kind of forces his way between them.
Yeah, I like the way Ian just basically abandons her completely, yeah. doesn't he? You know, it's sort of like, you come in, Barbara, and then just wanders off and doesn't even notice that she's not come with him.
Quillian helps Barbara over the cliff edge.
Yes.
You're right, Kirby. And then
you wonder how far down that cliff is, because she's actually pretty unscathed, isn't she?
Yes.
You know, how far does she actually fall? Is it like Elizabeth Sladen in The Five Doctors and the slope of moderate inconvenience? Is it one of those?
Yeah, I don't like that. Well, it's a bit of a similar sort of scream, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, he was a bit pathetic, wasn't he? You know, you wonder how far, you know, is it sort of like a couple of foot drop or something? Is that really it? And the fact that Ian basically doesn't seem to notice that Barbara hasn't come after him.
Yeah.
He doesn't hear the scream either. You know, it's... does he actually really care?
Yeah, no. No, obviously not. So, anyway, then we see the precursor to the sonic screwdriver, the sonic spanner, which is used to bring down some rocks and block them in. Now, there was a bit of a inconsistency with this particular part of the film. He brings down the rocks to block them in, but he is still able to gain entrance to the cage by another entrance anyway, which he must have known they could have got out from anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. They find it and.
Yeah, he knew how to get away, and they didn't.
But if he knew there was another entrance to the cave, then he must have known that they could get out the same entrance anyway. So that was a bit silly.
Only if they could find it.
Of course they could find it. Who's breathing on their microphone?
Andy's blowing into the microphone again.
Sorry, I'll just try to adjust my microphone. Is that better? How's that?
Well, try breathing again.
I am.
Not better. It was all right last week, so do what you did last week.
How's that then? How's that?
That's better. Hey.
Right, that's better.
Yeah. Right. Where do we go? Oh, yeah. So Barbara's fallen down the cliff into a pile of sand, which has obviously broken her fall with a couple of twigs as well, which I presume she tried grabbing because she's got a hand over a twig. I'm thinking they're implying that as she fell down, she grabbed the branch and it broke her fall. Yes, go on.
Sorry.
Oh, you're done. Sorry, I thought you were going to interrupt
me. Well, I was trying to interrupt, and you said, I'm talking, so I stopped interrupting.
But, oh, good. Okay. Well, then I stopped, and it doesn't matter.
The infotext makes a note that that is precisely what they were trying to imply with the branches.
Well,
that she had grabbed a hold of a branch on the way down.
I will say that was a successful implication.
Yes.
And I haven't had enough Stella for it to affect my speech at this particular moment. I've only had a couple of sips. It's just my usual mouth not working properly. So, yes, Ian and the Doctor.
That wasn't me, by the way.
Are up doing some caving. And the Doctor, fortunately, does have a torch, so they are able to do a bit of exploring. And then, Vicky meets Kaquillian while... Has she hidden Barbara yet? I think she has, hasn't she?
Yes, Barbara.
And I seem to remember watching this first time, I fairly quickly realised that Kaquillian was Bennett and vice versa.
It's not exactly subtle, is it? No, it isn't.
Which does sort of add to the stupidity of Vicky. Well, yes?
Unfortunately, I knew that before I ever saw this. So
okay.
I didn't have to work it out.
Good.
I'd already heard about it, so...
So, but what also gets me, of course, it's all fairly clear to us that Ian and Barbara take a bit of time to realise this as well. Because I think if I'd been in that situation, I would have worked it out quite quickly. Of course, Vicky has to show Barbara the flare, which she's going to fire up when the rescue ship arrives, just so as we can see the flare later on in more sort of tragic circumstances. So the Doctor and Ian try to edge their way across a sort of a shelf, and then some swords come out and very nearly give Ian a vasectomy just before the end of the episode.
You know, Ian is so skinny. He could have just turned sideways.
Yeah.
And he would have slid on, you know, and he would have been untouched.
Yes.
But because he keeps standing broadside to them, you know, then it looks dangerous.
Yeah, I did quite like the way they got he got out of it by taking his jacket off and grabbing the blades that way. I thought that was quite good. Did you think the weird looking monster looked a bit like a giant prawn? So I just wondered if this was any relation of the giant prawn that was in The Invisible Enemy.
Probably Master.
Yes.
And dragging himself around on the floor in a stupid looking costume.
Yeah.
The giant prawn was played by Tom Sheridan, who also provided the voice of the rescue ship.
Mm. I never knew that. Did you know that, Mary?
Well, I'm a better person for knowing that, yes.
That's quite funny when sort of Bennett realizes that the people he thought he'd killed are not dead. Some good sort of acting, really, from that bloke.
Was this really one of the first true cliffhangers.
Yes.
Oh, dear me.
It was, though.
where's my... rim shot. Yeah.
No. It's got to warrant a rim shot to get a rim shot. No, sorry.
I think that actually does. No, I'm with Kirk. No. I think that does deserve a rim shot.
No. One, because I haven't got the folder open.
If they were walking along that shelf, they were being a bit shelfish.
Oh, dear.
No, stop no, encouraging him.
That does not deserve a rim shot. That is poor. That is poor.
Yes. Anyway, right. So Barbara finds the flare gun in the cupboard, just to re-emphasize that she now knows where it is. And Ian and the doctor find some daylight while Vicky is just about to sort of, well, Barbara thinks Vicky's just about to get done by this little monster. So she shoots it.
Master.
Yes.
Master. Jaclyn Hill got injured during the first take with the flare gun.
She did?
Yes.
How? In what way?
It misfired and it burned her a little bit.
Oh, dear.
What I don't understand is Vicky goes off on Barbara for shooting that creature. Yeah. I don't hear, and maybe, you know, and I even replayed that little section twice. She never once defends the beast as if it's gentle or whatever. She just is really mad at Barbara for killing it. And I'm thinking, well, it's a dangerous beast. Why is she being so like this?
Hmm. We don't know that it's not.
Thing you'd think it was dangerous, but I'm saying Vicky doesn't say it's not dangerous. She just gets mad at Barbara for killing it.
I don't think she has to, does she? No, she just sort of wants to emphasize the fact that she liked the creature rather than it didn't matter whether it was dangerous or not.
Eating her.
Hmm. So the doctor and Ian find Barbara and Vicky and that's it, Barbara and Vicky. And and then, obviously, Vicky then tells them the story, and she's in a bit of a mood with Barbara. So the doctor has a heart-to-heart with Vicky because she is the like-for-like replacement for Susan, and she, you know, she's immediately becomes that figure in the team. So the doctor then decides he's going to have a chat with Bennett, and finds his way into the room sort of blocked, but uses his brain and manages to get in there anyway. And then
his brain?
Yes.
Yeah,
he's smashing the door with his brain.
Well, you know what I mean. He uses his brain to realise that he could get in. And then finds a few rather suspicious anomalies in the room and a trapdoor. Underneath the trapdoor, obviously, is a...
Anomaly.
Shut up.
Anomaly.
The trapdoor, obviously, is a direct route to the caves.
Get away from that trapdoor.
And then the doctor... Sorry, Ian, Barbara and Vicky go into Bennett's room and find nobody there at all, and we're a bit perplexed. The doctor finds his way into the sort of what is essentially the government rooms of the people of Dido, and has which has now become more traditional one to one with the baddie. You know, the doctor's face off with the baddie at the end of the story, and then he has a bit of a fisticuffs with him. Which is unusual for
the
first
doctor. I mean, given that, you know, he's quite up for it, isn't he? I mean, that's several times.
This doddering old man has suddenly turned into Rambo. Mm.
And it's also quite interesting whether he's having fisticuffs in this episode, that he also had a bit of fisticuffs in the next episode as well.
Yes.
Yeah, he does. Throws the guy through the window, doesn't he, in the Romans?
Yeah. And then, who are these chaps in the weird suits? Are they the people that originally came on the spaceship that Bennett thought he'd killed?
Well, I thought they were actually original inhabitants.
They're Didoans, are they?
They're
Didoans.
Didonians?
Yeah. Didonians, that's the word. Well, I like that one, Didonians, yeah.
Didonians.
And then Bennett, rather strangely, decides to just fall off the cliff, which is a bit weird. But well, that's all right, though.
It's a bit like Barbara, isn't
there's
it?
There's a few twigs to catch on this, but he might be all right.
Well, it's only 3 foot anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. That was a rather strange ending to that part of the story, because it just ended with the doctor sort of being slightly, sort of nearly unconscious, because he was half throttled by Bennett. And then he's in the TARDIS, and then goes and persuades Vicky, because she's got no one now, to join them instead, and which is probably similar to maybe how Susan joined him, because she would have been with her parents rather than be with a doctor, perhaps.
Yeah, but the doctor's grandfather. I mean, at least there is a connection there, isn't there?
Yes, yes, indeed. So there you go. That's that's the rescue, right? We haven't done this one before, have we?
No.
No, right. So I'm going to say...
Before last week, I'd never seen it.
No. I'm going to say what I think about this one. I quite like it, really. It's a two-part sort of romp, really. I think it's difficult to judge Maureen O'Brien on that, her first performance in Doctor Who, because it's difficult to get into a character like that quickly. But I think she did okay. I like the story. Even though it was fairly blatantly obvious what was going on, I did like this sort of bloke playing the two characters, the Coquillian thing. I like the bit where Barbara shoots the pet of Vicky, and I just great fun. I really, really like the story. I always have done. Where it's so short, it's one of the things you can watch from time to time and get thorough enjoyment out of it. It's a very simple, quick little pit of Doctor Who, and it's got a few little flaws, which I'm not going to talk about because I liked it. And if anybody wants to diss it, I shall be coming round their house and telling them off and perhaps giving a bit of a smack bottom. Mary?
Are you turning it to me?
Yes.
Well, then sit back, because here it comes. You better have a plane ticket handy and a swatter.
Oh, no.
A swatter? I can do it with my bare hands.
Okay. No, I think this is one of the silliest, stupidest stories in Doctor Who.
It was good.
It easily falls into my bottom 10.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's nowhere near that bad.
Eyebrows came down for the entire episode. Oh, I just kept saying, this is stupid. Oh, this doesn't make sense. Well, okay, we figured this out. How can she be so stupid? What is with this doddering old man that suddenly becomes Rambo and he's battering down doors and one-on-one, you know, mano-a-mano fighting with the creature. We've got Vicky, who hides Barbara from Coquillian, only to have him arrive, go into another room, and then she brings Barbara out, and the two of them sit there at a table and have this great conversation. What did she think's going to happen? You know, so then she knows Coquillian is going to come through that door any minute there, but she's got to hide Barbara again. And then this Bennett guy, they kept saying, oh, you know, he can't use his legs. Well, he manages to get out of bed, come through the door, through that passageway into the next room. Even though he looks a little weak, he obviously can walk.
He's acting.
So why she thinks he can't
He never said he couldn't walk.
No, it's her that said.
Well, it's Vicky who says he can't. Mm. Vicky says he can't use his legs.
Yes, but he's a great. He's obviously a great actor because he was able to fool her playing this part of Coquillian.
I'll put it down to that. The first time I heard Coquillian, I'm thinking, that's the same voice. It's got to be the same guy. Mm. And then all that stupid stuff in the cave, you know, with the swords coming out and Ian could have easily avoided them, but didn't. It just goes on and on. Vicky goes to get water, tells Barbara to set the table, and then a few minutes later, they're clearing up bowls and cups, and I'm thinking, what did they eat? Did they just drink water? I don't think my eyebrows came down for this whole thing, because nothing makes sense in this. The only good thing is the introduction of Maureen O'Brien as Vicky. Mm. I really liked Vicky. Mm. And what's unfortunate is that Susan gets written out because they never really utilized her character very well. So we're glad to see Susan gone because Vicky's a very positive energy. But I think that was up to the writing as much as anything. So anyway, this one, and I read where this came out right after Christmas. So if they were expecting viewership to be low or they just had a hole to fill, I think they really missed when they, and even the episode titles are so over the top. I mean, the powerful enemy. Who's the powerful enemy?
Mary.
Desperate measures. Well, what's,
you've been taking your grumpy pills this week.
Yes. Well, that's my job on this show is to be the grumpy one. So.
No, it's not.
So I'm, I really, really did not like this episode.
I never would have guessed. You are, of course, completely wrong. Isn't she, Kirby?
So buy your plane ticket.
Absolutely, completely wrong. I'd never seen this, even though I knew about Bennett and Coquillian. I'd never seen this before last week. I went into this and enjoyed the heck out of it. It was a fun romp.
That's what I said.
I had heard people make fun of Coquillian's costume, and I thought it was pretty cool.
That sand beast costume. It's just a man in a big long sock.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the prawn. I'm talking about Coquillian. The prawn was stupid, but it didn't really matter. This was just fun. And yeah, there were holes in it. I mean, people in the beginning are saying that the Didonians are a peaceful people, and yet they're making booby traps and things like that. And
that might have been some sort of assault course for them. Yeah, but also it might have been that they weren't originally peaceful people. They just became peaceful. And that's what they implied. Because there was only 100 of them left, they decided that they better become peaceful before they wipe themselves out.
Well, so now there's what? Only 2 left? And they're both men? So what's going to happen to the Dido people?
We don't know that there aren't other Didonians. That just the 2 men happened to come out. Mary, you're being too picky.
And normally I'm picky. You notice I'm not being terribly picky about this one at all. I loved it.
Yes,
good. That's all I can say.
Andy?
Well, I'm with Mary, I thought.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I was bored rigid by this. It didn't help the fact that I don't have it on DVD, so I went to the garage and I got my old VHS out, put it in the machine, and the VHS was obviously trying to tell me something, so it chewed it up completely. It's wrecked the tape. So I ended up trying to watch it on Daily Motion. And Daily Motion, if they're either crashing or got an advert for some game where, hey, dude, where's my camera? I'm aiming at a landing. And he kept stopping watching.
Well, that's not Doctor Who's fault if you're watching adverts.
But I think he was trying to tell me something. He told me, don't bother watching this, because it really was utter drivel.
No,
I was bored, rigid.
It was not. It was a little bit of pantomime. It was great.
It was so obvious, you know, what was going on. And it was just some... You know, like Barbara falling about 2 feet off a cliff and Ian going off and, hang on a minute, it's my turn to talk.
No, it's my turn to argue with you.
You know, this Ian goes off, you come in, Barbara, yes, and he sort of wanders off and doesn't notice her screaming or anything like that. And Corquillion, Benny, you know, well, he's fairly obvious. I mean, and Vicky, gosh, she's a drip, isn't she? You know, I'm just bored rigid by this.
Can
you
I know, just say?
The only thing I got out of it, I got all the ironing done while I was watching
this.
That's about the only benefit I did.
You can go to a blooming pantomime and know exactly what's going to blooming will happen, it's so blatantly off, and still have good fun. I went to Spamalot. I've seen that movie, well, once, to be fair, Holy Grail. And I knew exactly what was coming up with Spamalot, apart from the songs. But still, it was absolutely fantastic. You can't use that, we knew what was going on bit as an excuse to say it wasn't very good. It was very good.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was good.
It was good.
Thank you.
It was good.
No.
I now have a First Doctor story that I really enjoyed that I'd never seen before. It was good.
Yes, thank you, Kirby. I mean, Kirby are right on that one. So that's a bonus point for Kirby.
Thank you. Ding.
Oh, there we go. Right then. So, let's see what the others think. This is Billy Kirk Bright. It is, honestly. We'll start eventually.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How are you doing? Okay, The Rescue by David Whittaker. There's not a great deal I've seen of William Hartnell, to be honest, or at all any of the black and white era of Doctor Who, despite being a confessed Doctor Who fan since 1972. Yeah, I've not seen much of Troughton or Hartnell, but I'm getting there. What I have seen of Willie Hartnell is the fact that he's a cantankerous, nasty old man, which was quite evident in Unearthly Child, particularly when he whisked away Barbara and Ian without them knowing in the TARDIS. Quite deceptive and... And another time in the first Dalek story where they went back into the city under the false pretense of them needing that particular part for the TARDIS, and it turns out that wasn't... I mean, you know, the Doctor wanted to go in for his own. He had his own agenda, so to speak. Quite selfish, quite conniving and manipulative, but we see that as time has gone on, that this aspect of the Doctor does mellow, thank goodness for that. But in regard to this story, The Rescue, my biggest gripe is the monster, in this case being Quirquillion, however you say it. Simply and quite obviously a man dressed up in a costume with a ridiculous
Doctor
looking
Who's
mask.
Like that.
Yes,
is.
That's exactly what he was, a man dressed up in a costume. as the story depicts, but I thought this story would have been better had the villain or the monster been far more sinister, more scarier. I thought that would have made the story far better in this case, but anyway. With the central theme of this story being the introduction of Vicky, I thought that was very well done. I quite enjoyed Vicky, actually. She was I thought she acted the part well, and a great character. A very touching moment towards the end when she finds out that it was Bennett that murdered her father. And even more touching, I thought, was when the TARDIS crew took her on board with her having nowhere else to go. I thought that worked quite well. Brilliant stuff. But although I'd not go out of my way to see this story again, I thought it was a nice little two-parter, no less. I like two-parters, they're free of unnecessary padding. Okay. But with this story being in between the Dalek invasion of the Earth, a cracking story, and the Romans, I thought it seemed quite apparent to me it wasn't much more than a filler with the sole intention to introduce Vicky.
Yes.
Which was fine. But anyway, that's my thoughts on The Rescue. Take care.
Thank you, Billy. You all sort of sound like you're leaning a bit more over towards Mary's side of thinking.
But quite right, sir.
A few half-decent thoughts in there. So, this is going to be interesting. I've got a funny feeling that the... Yes, that's right, exactly. Not particularly well-timed. I've got a funny feeling that the... basically, that Mary... Will you stop breathing on your blimmin' microphone? For God's sake!
I've moved it. Sorry, I'm comfortable.
Otherwise, I'll deduct your opinion on the episode. All right. Yes.
Get a new microphone.
No, just stop putting it in front of your nose. Anyway.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcasters, Ian Kirk. In The Big Bang Theory this week, one of the characters, Penny, was a guest on a podcast.
What? A few thousand people listen to you talk about nerd stuff?
Next in our long journey from Bill Hartnell to Billy Piper, The Rescue by David Whittaker. The TARDIS lands on the planet Dido. In legend, Dido is the first queen of Carthage, a city on the North African coast and an enemy of Rome. The wreck of a spaceship contains a man, Bennett, and a girl, Vicky. Vicky's terrified of a monster called Coquillion, which turns out to be Bennett in a costume.
Does it?
He would have got away with it too if it were not for the meddling TARDIS crew.
Keep up, Adam.
Maureen O'Brien was 21 when this was made.
Was she?
It is never stated how old Vicky is supposed to be, but she is very naive.
Yes.
I think she's 16, a replacement for Susan. In the later story, The Mythmakers, she meets someone who is 17 and says that is only a bit older than she is.
Well, there you go.
Barbara kills a soup dragon.
Oh, yes.
Coquillion enters Bennett's room and never leaves, but Bennett says he is gone. This should alert Vicky that something odd is going on. But
there is a hole in the hull. There's a hole in it.
At the beginning, the Doctor says the Dido people have claws, but at the end they look human. Why did Bennett attack the TARDIS crew? It would not be much of a story if he did not. Why did the Dido people build that trap on the ledge? Did they know a cliffhanger would be needed at the end of episode 1?
Yes.
Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah,
Master.
Yes.
I figured that there was just another door.
Yeah, well, I saw a gap in the hull. I thought that's how he was getting through.
Yeah, it didn't bother me that about... even the infotext makes a note that she should have been alerted by the fact that he came back in and said that Coquillion's gone. But it didn't bother me.
No, it didn't bother me either. Did it bother you, Andy?
I'm sure it
did. I didn't like it. No, it bored me. Bored me.
It all bothered me.
Yeah. Sorry, it was just drivel. It was drivel.
Yes,
no, it wasn't.
Nothing makes sense.
Oh, my goodness. I did not expect this.
Stop taking your grumpy pills. Yes, well, don't worry, listeners. It was good.
I wish we could hear what Debbie thought.
Yes. I wish we could hear what Debbie thought as well. Funny how she always disappears when we need her the most.
Yes.
Hang on. Somebody message her on what's that thing called again? Messenger. Just ask her what she thought. At least we can get some sort of opinion on it, couldn't we? Okay, don't bother then. Only I asked. Also, was it gone quiet because you can't talk and type at the same time? Obviously, that's the case because nobody's talking to me.
You said somebody. I don't know. I mean,
oh, it's usually Kirby, isn't it? That's what my wife does, you know. When she says somebody, she's usually talking about me. Funny enough. Right. Now time to welcome new members of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. We now have 430 members. That means somebody must have left. We've got one new member, Edward Lawson. Hello, Edward. Thank you for joining the group. It'd be nice if, I really always say this, but it would be nice if some of these people actually listened to the show, wouldn't it? It's interesting to note that you did mention the, what was that Doctor Who podcast, Kirby, you mentioned earlier?
Which one?
The one you, which one?
On the Plain Doctor?
Yeah, Plain Doctor. I bet they're not members of our group.
I don't know. I'll take a look.
Well, make sure they you get them to join. Yeah, so thank you, Edward. Thank you for joining the group. Therefore, it obviously must be time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Everybody ready?
Imagine this. There's actually going to be a chance for someone other than Debbie to win.
No, it just means you'll be the winner. That's all, Kirby.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, right. Let's see if I can find the questions. Oh, iPad's upside down. Oh, that doesn't make a difference. Right. What was that dinging?
What was that?
I heard a ding.
It's Mary trying to contact Debbie.
Earth to Debbie. Come in, Debbie.
Okay, well, I sent a message and Debbie saw it. So hopefully we'll get a reply.
She's just saying, bugger off. I'm cleaning up puke. Yes, everybody, the latest podcast saboteur, that's Isla, is being ill just in time for the podcast recording. So.
Yes, you said that earlier.
Yes, but I wasn't recording then.
Yes, I think you were.
No, I wasn't. No, well, come on, it's supposed to be a pantomime thing. No, I wasn't.
Oh, yes, you were.
Bless her. We need to, what it is, I reckon the cure for Isla being ill when we're recording is to get Isla on the show.
How old is Isla?
Little. She's only four.
Oh, right. This, I've no
Stop
idea.
Stop breathing into the microphone.
Yes, indeed. You took the words right out of my mouth. Right.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Yes, it right. must have been when I was kissing you.
Or breathing on me. Right, so, here we go. Are we ready? This is Andy's question.
That's Debbie.
Debbie answering.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Oh, she says, I didn't like it very much and felt it could have been a lot
Yay.
Better. Hope this helps.
Debbie.
Washing Isla at the moment. I thought she was going to say washing Isla's sick away at the moment. Bless her, she's so tired. Good. Will you stop messaging her in the middle of the quiz, please?
I've just done it already.
Oh, right. I'll message her, as they say. Nonsense. There we go. Nonsense. That'll say it in one word, won't it? Nonsense. There we go. Right.
Okay,
are we ready? This is Andy's question.
You can't spell Adam. That's not his stuff. Nonsense.
Shut up. Yes?
Master, one of the people in the Plain Doctor podcast is a member of our group.
Uh-huh. Okay, fair enough. So, can we get on with the quiz now?
I suppose.
Shall I message Debbie the questions? Right then, here we go. This is Andy's question. What word was on the hull of the crashed spaceship?
It was Danger 201.
Hey,
danger.
No, that's the answer I was looking for. Thank you, Mary.
That's the first word I've written on my notes. That is
Mary.
Yes. Notes.
Be quiet, Mary. What number was written on the side of the spaceship?
I know.
Obviously, did you just said it? What number, Mary, was written on the side of the spaceship?
Yeah, you just said it, and it went right out of my mind.
Well,
so I don't know.
That's very naughty. Go on, Andy.
201.
Correct.
And see, even though I put a screenshot of the ship, I didn't write down what it said.
Yeah, no excuse.
No, well, I did, you see. I know Adam's light now, so I wrote that down.
Okay. Kirby, how many days...
Master, you need to give me a chance to say master.
How many days is the rescue ship due, according to Bennett?
69.
No.
No?
Go on, Mary.
Go on, Mary.
What, 69 hours, they say.
69 hours.
Oh, shush. How many days, Mary, according to Bennett?
He says 2 days, doesn't he?
And that's it. Nobody else can answer that one.
It was three days.
He says 3 days.
It was.
I thought you were going to ask about the hours.
No. This is why I said in the question. Bennett said. Right. This is why it says according to Bennett, because later on she goes to the machine and the crew on the radio tell her that they're 69 hours away. Please pay attention when doing this quiz. Two. No, he didn't. He said three.
This dissolves into...
Yes, no, he does. Three. Andy.
Hello.
Yes.
Right. How do you spell Coquillion?
With great difficulty, I think. okay. It's Coquillion.
Oh, wow. Andy might win this quiz.
Right, Mary.
No chance.
How many flying hours... is the rescue ship away from Dido when Vicky radios the shut up, Mary?
69.
That's what she said. That's what she said.
Oh, please.
I
need easy ones, yeah.
That's what she... Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And quick.
Right, Kirby.
And nobody better include any L's in the name of the planet.
Be quiet. Kirby.
Master.
Which switch... is the TARDIS door switch.
I know.
That's the number 4.
Well, well, well.
Ooh.
Is the correct answer. Right, the score.
It still bothered me because the door switch keeps moving around.
Who's breathing on the bloody microphone?
I've just moved.
Okay. The scores...
Be ready for real minutia questions because there's not a lot to ask on these... Two episodes.
Mary, more slagging the episode off, please. Right. The scores are, in last place with 2 points each, Mary and Kirby, and in the lead with 5, it's Andy, whose question this is, funny enough.
Okay.
Who was the first to step out of the TARDIS?
Right, it's Ian or Barbara. So I will go with Ian.
Barbara. Barbara.
No, there wasn't any character called Barbara. There was Barbara, and I'll give you that one as Barbara, but there was no Barbara. Right then, yes, right there. Mary.
Yes.
What is Coquillion's weapon usually used for?
Construction.
Or is currently used for destruction, as far as Coquillions go. Right. Kirby.
Master.
What is Vicky's limited distance from the ship?
Oh, what was...
Now, I asked you that question. I'll give the... You don't ask me the question. I ask the questions.
How many...
Oh, yes, I think I know, yes.
I don't know.
Right, then go on then, Andy.
Oh, God, it's either 50 feet or 50 yards, and I'm desperately trying to think which one it is.
Shouldn't it be in metres?
Be quiet.
Don't be stupid. No, we don't. We don't do metric rubbish round here.
Not in the 60s, anyway.
It's 50 feet or 50 yards. Oh, I will go with 50 yards, and that's going to be wrong. Yes.
All right. We may have a new champion here.
Yes.
Right, Andy.
Yes.
What is the total population of Dido when the Doctor previously visited?
Now, I've got this written down here, and it's barely 100.
Is precisely the right answer, as I had it written down here.
Right.
Mary.
Yes?
What colour were the cave monster's eyes?
Green.
Kirby.
Master.
What was the name Vicky gave to the cave monster?
Sandy.
The scores then after that little round, or those rounds, are in last place with 5 points, Kirby in second place with 6 points, Mary, and then the lead with 9 points. Andy, whose question this is. What did Ian call Coquillian while trying to cheer up Vicky? You won't get this one.
No, you're right, I won't.
I can sort of...
Oh, go on then. Whose question is this?
No, I'm trying to... I've not chance to answer.
Yeah, he tries to put people off. It's one of his long-term tactics on this quiz.
I'm desperately trying to think what it's...
Delay while he looks and looks.
Yes.
No, I don't know. No,
okay,
idea.
And apparently Kirby's going to have a go at it.
Something like Conky Queens. It was Conky something.
No, it wasn't actually. It was a bit more ruder than that. And I do apologise, listeners, but this is in the script of a Len children. Yeah, that's what she said, Mary. But it was the right answer. I'm going to give you a ding for that, even though I don't normally give the third option. Yes, Cocky Licking was the answer to that question. Right, Mary.
Very strange.
Mary.
Yes?
What year did Vicky leave Earth?
I know.
24, I think.
24. Shut up. What was it? Sorry.
93?
Yes.
So he went for about 3 years then. 2400, 24 something else, and then 2493. It was the correct answer. Oh dear. Who's just dying there? All right. All right, Kirby.
Master.
Be quiet. Where did Vicky's father go for a job?
Astra.
No, just the planet Astra. We'll do on that one. Right, so hardly any questions left. The scores are at the moment in last place with 7 points, Kirby. And in joint first place with 9 points each, Mary and Andy. The two people that like the story the least.
Yeah.
Are in the
list. Because we were so bored by it. I mean, that's what I think. It's because it was so awful.
Right.
That's why we sort of, it's drilled into our memories.
Nonsense. It must have felt.
That's the problem.
It was such a good story that you remembered all these parts of it. Right, Andy.
Yes.
Where was there a spotted handkerchief within the story? Won't get this one. Very proud of this question.
Spotted handkerchief. Okay, somebody's got to have pulled it out of their pocket, so I would guess the doctor has pulled it out of his top pocket.
You'd guess wrong. Anybody?
Nope.
Oh, good. You didn't get that one, then. The answer is in Ian's jacket pocket. Right, Mary.
Yeah.
Where did the doctor meet Bennett? Had a name. That's the name I'm looking for.
Oh.
In the script. Like.
In that ceremonial hall?
I'll give you a point for that, because you mentioned the word hall, but it did have a name.
Was it not the Parliament Hall or something?
It's the People's Hall of Judgment.
It's the correct answer. Kirby gets one of those. I will give you that, because I did it under the previous question. What then? Kirby.
Master.
How did they get back into the TARDIS?
They put one foot in front of the
other. No, yeah. Remember, the doctor's found unconscious in the People's Hall of Judgment. And the next scene, they're all in the TARDIS.
They took the liberty of borrowing his key.
Yeah, see, they did. Eventually you get there, don't we? Right, so there's two questions left. It's quite close. These are obviously free-for-all questions. And the scores are, in last place with 9 points, Andy. And joint first place with 10 points each, Kirby and Mary.
Ooh.
Yay!
Oh.
So,
question... I don't get here very often.
That's what she said. who spoke the last line of the story?
The doctor.
Yes, very well done, Mary. Last question. What was Daphne Dare's job behind the scenes? I'll do that. So
I know.
A bit more.
Hang on.
Andy?
Costume supervisor.
Yes, that worked really well, didn't it? And that is, even though I didn't read the question out clearly, yes, the question, listeners, for the listeners, was what was Daphne Dare's job behind the scenes? So the final scores on this week's wonderful edition of this amazing quiz show are in last place with 10 points, Kirby. In second place with 11 points,
even without them.
Andy. And the winner this week with 12 points is Mary.
Welcome, Mary.
So I think that,
oh, good grief. Thank you goes out to Isla, who kept Debbie at home.
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
This story or our podcast has bored Andy so much that he's making bad jokes on Jeff Waddle's Facebook page.
Oh, come on. It was, you saw that, and that was unbelievable. That was. Come on.
Yes, I know.
Yes, that particular bit of amusement has gone right over my head because I haven't actually seen Jeff Waddle's Facebook page.
You don't want to. You really don't.
No,
want
you
to.
Don't.
Okay. Well, I won't look then. Okay. Let's.
I didn't know we were boring Andy that much.
Doctor Who News
for Andy. Maybe he needs a more challenging podcast.
Doctor Who News. It's going to be a very, very quick feature this because there isn't any. Apparently,
really?
The Big Finish May releases arrive early. Doctor Who Damaged Goods is Jonathan Morris's adaptation of a novel by Russell T. Davis, who obviously produced Doctor Who 10 years ago. It's 10 years ago, everybody. It stars Sylvester McCoy as the 7th Doctor, accompanied by his umbrella. No, sorry. By this time, Roz Forrester, played by Yasmin Bannerman, and Chris, I can't say that. Wedge, played by Travis Travis Oliver. And also Doctor Who The Well-Mannered War is a forced adaptation of the novels of Doctor Who writer Gareth Roberts. And it features Tom Baker, Lala Ward and John Leeson. So that's something for Big Finish fans to delve into.
If I might mention, now you're on the topic of Big Finish, last week when we talked about Dalek Invasion of Earth, and I mentioned a Big Finish story that takes place following, it's called The Earthly Child.
Yes, I mentioned it as well.
You mentioned it, you're right. I have since remembered that there is another story that relates to Dalek Invasion, and it's called Masters of Earth. It was just released last year. And it's a 6th Doctor and Perry story where they arrive in Scotland 1 year before the 1st Doctor arrives in London to finish off the Daleks. So the 6th Doctor, knowing he can't finish them off then because it's a year early and he can't play with the timeline, he deals with an entire other offshoot of the Dalek invasion, which is a group called the Elite Prime, and they are robo-men of much advanced development. They are like regular humans, but they are still slaves of the Daleks, and his interactions with them. It's a very interesting story. It's a wonderful take, you know, since it takes place before the Daleks are going to be taken away for good. Excuse me. And it has the history, you know, the firebombing and the plague that precedes their invasion. And it's the Daleks with the discs on their backs. And they do encounter the regular robo-men. So it's a very creatively written story. And it's a lot of fun.
Can I just say, who wrote this?
Who wrote the...
It's the one you were just talking about.
Oh, darn. I'd have to look it up.
Because I think I might sue them. Because about 2 years ago, the Isle of Wight County Press ran a competition for writing a short Doctor Who story. The main volume of that story was more or less what you just told me.
Really?
Mm. Not in Scotland, but in London.
Yeah.
Not with the 6th Doctor, with the 11th Doctor. But essentially the same sort of thing. Right, so let's get the lawyers on the phone. Meanwhile, who won.co.uk?
Is that whowentthat.co.uk?
Yes. Lots of stuff available on pre-order, like Suburban Hell, which is a looks like a big Finnish release. Oblivion, which is a paperback book by Scott Gray and all. Last of the Cybermen, another big Finnish production. Jago and Lightfoot 9, that's another big Finnish production. The Glorious Dead, which is a book. Frontiers, the audio novel. Blake 7, Devil's Advocate. Defectors by Nicholas Briggs, which is a big Finnish 7th Doctor story. And Deathmatch, which is Tom Baker, big Finnish story. And of course, Dalek Potato Head, which still hasn't come out yet. Those are all available for pre-order from whowon.co.uk. And as far as latest products go, if you like jigsaw puzzles, there's a 500-piece Doctor Who jigsaw puzzle. I'll just say David Tennant on it. So I'm not quite sure. Let's have a closer look at the picture. So you can see the picture on the side. I think it is actually David Tennant as the Doctor. so, yeah, that's priced £10.99. And, of course, if you like your big finish again, Charlotte Pollard CD is also available to buy right now, along with your Dalek bowl and your Dalek plate. Yeah. Talking of David Tennant, apparently he's in the US version of Broadchurch at the moment. Well, he has been on it because he's now in this country. What's it called again? Anybody know? No?
What is it called here?
Yeah.
Broadchurch.
No, is it? No, I'm talking about the US remake.
It's called Grace Point.
That's it, Grace Point, yeah. It's really weird because he can't really do the American accent, can he? He's all gone quiet. And he went to America.
So I have no opinion on it.
No, but
so.
he went to America and nearly made it in some sort of lawyer based drama, which didn't last long because he couldn't do an American accent. So they get him back to America to play the part he played in Britain, do an American accent though, and he still can't do the American accent. But and it's really weird, isn't it? Because it's same blimmin' story. Why do an American version of something?
Yeah,
which is on in America.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand this redoing stuff in America. Is it that Americans can't understand English and Scottish accents, so they have to do it that way?
They cannot. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a big.
I can.
Why don't they just dub it over? Dub over a Broadchurch.
Yeah. That seems so much better. And the second season of Broadchurch is so much better than the first.
Because I know, obviously, Tennant being his broad Scottish accent in Broadchurch, all they had to do is dub him over, himself over it, doing in maybe a more Cockney style, rather than not American, obviously. Because I think all the other accents, in, apart from in the most recent series of Broadchurch with Eve Miles in a broad Welsh accent. There seems to be this ongoing thing of remaking stuff that's perfectly all right as it is. I've heard a thing that they're going to redo the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Why?
Yeah,
I mean it's ridiculous.
That's because they want the Americans to tune in to names that they know, as opposed to unknowns that they won't watch shows of people they don't know.
At the moment, Doctor Who is safe because Mr. Moffat has refused to allow anybody to do it. But a future producer might say otherwise, and that's a bit of a worrying notion. However, if they were going to do a remake of Doctor Who, I'd order them to do the remake of every single story from start to finish, from Unearthly Child onwards. That would be an interesting concept. Yes, sorry, did somebody was somebody wanting to interrupt me then, or did I just bore everyone to tears? Oh, okay. Right. So, next week we're going to be looking again at the Romans. And let's see when we're going to be doing it, shall we? Now, unfortunately, I'm glad we ended up recording it today, because I found out yesterday that I've got to do 3 consecutive night shifts. Because my store, the Co-op, is closing and turning into a Marks & Spencer's. So, for some reason, I've got to be sort of night watchman for 3 consecutive nights from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. That's on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So I could have recorded the show on a Tuesday, but I should really be sleeping at that particular time. Right, so next Sunday, Deb's at a bridal fair, but I'm not. I'm working, and I shall be probably available to record around the same sort of time as it is now. But can we watch a four-part story in that time? I think we probably can. What do you think, Andy?
I'll have to get permission from the management. Because she does it. Sunday night, we have nice Sunday night dinner together, and she's got a bit nuts about me doing this. I'll have to beg permission from the management to do this. If we could do it slightly earlier, possibly.
Not likely, because you've got to bear in mind that I finish work at 5, I've got to have dinner, that then finishes at 6, and then have baths and all that malarkey.
Let me check with the management.
And I probably will be out there building some other thing in the garden.
What, like a roller coaster or something?
No, like probably another flower bed or actually, this is for vegetables.
Right, we're going to put it in for that date anyway, and just hope that Andy can make it.
Don't mind my all these
lovely dawn permitting.
All these henpecked men.
I enjoy working in the garden.
Do you? I don't.
Okay,
okay. So that's it then. Fairly shortish episode, considering last week's was over 2 hours long. But we did have quite a long story to talk about again. But like I say, don't worry, listeners. Mary and Andy were wrong. It's well worth watching The Rescue.
They were absolutely wrong.
Yeah, it is worth watching.
And Debbie, she didn't like it either.
That's a dribble.
Don't take any notice. It's a good DVD. Go out and buy it. You get another story with it called The Romans. So it's good value for money. So until next week, thank you for listening to the show. What's that podcast called again, Kirby?
Which podcast?
The one that you mentioned earlier on twice.
Playing Doctor? Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the show, especially the Playing Doctor podcast. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Be seeing you.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APB Services production and a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.